You are listening to a digitally remastered class of Rav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050, or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu.
I guess to me the most perplexing problem, most greatest difficulty that most people have at the Seder, it doesn't have any direction. And it comes after a while, children saying what they perceive to be intelligent Divrei Torah that they heard in school, and the other siblings not quite enjoying that, not listening. And is that what it's about? How do you run a Seder? Just go ahead and let everybody say their gematria is the word they heard from a teacher. Or is there some point to a Seder? It's a seminal event in the yearly Jewish calendar, and it really makes sense that we should have some understanding of what we should be, message we should be delivering. So last week we spoke about one message. Today I want to suggest another message. It's an extremely important message, but if you don't walk away with a meaningful message, you lost a huge opportunity. Last Shabbos, and here of us living outside of Flatbush, we didn't find out about it till Motzei Shabbos or Sunday, of the enormous tragedy that happened. The man lost his whole family, 7 children, and it's really hard to imagine a worse and more painful tragedy. You see even the way the world reacted, Goyim reacted. Fire chiefs are not unaccustomed to finding somebody dead. A few people dead. He was shot. The mayor was the worst in the city of New York in terms of a tragedy. It was over 100 years that nobody had imagined anything like that. Couldn't remember anything like that happening. The next day, the Wall Street Journal had a whole article on it. So it was really something tragic. I'm not here to even begin figuring out what the causes are. I don't think we're supposed to. But if anybody wants to see the causes, just go to the internet and you can find so many causes that everybody knows what the causes of the fire are. You understand that's ridiculous. If a Navi came down and told us that, then maybe it's something to think about. But to someone to speculate the causes, that's not what the job of Jews are to do. What the job of the Jew is to do when a tragedy like that happens and we become apprised of it, what lesson is there for us? That is a legitimate question, because there's nothing in life that either we hear or we see that's not a message for us. In fact, the Baal HaTanya puts it in a very compelling way. The Gemara says if you see a sota body explode, you have to yazer atzmecha min hayayin. You have to make yourself a nozer. Why? Because it's likely to be her issues of infidelity were also probably driven by excess of liquor, and therefore you're obligated to make yourself a nozer. And the obvious question is, because she had that problem, what does that have to do with me? And he says, from here you see that anything a person sees is a message for them. Maybe during the summer we'll talk about the really perplexing thing is exactly if a person has issues of that nature, sounds pretty ridiculous to make himself a nozer for 30 days is going to have any effect at all. Doesn't make any sense. But that's not for today. But that's what he says. Obviously, I also think when Yirmiyahu Navi talks about the Churban and Eicha, he talked, Lo Yalechem Oivrei Derech. And I know Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who I knew very well for many years, anytime he ever had any bad news, not to tell you about you or just anything happened in the world, something terrible, he knew, he always started Lo Yalechem. I never heard it really before from anybody else when it's such an ongoing business, ongoing all the time, Lo Yalechem. But I think what he's saying also, because we understand that anything we hear is a message for us also. You come up 5 seconds before the woman's body explodes, 5 minutes after the body explodes, You don't know anything. So the fact that you came at that moment of time was a message. You heard something. If you would have been 5 minutes late, you wouldn't have heard the message. 5 minutes earlier, you wouldn't have heard the message. So every message, anything we hear, is also a way of God giving us a message. And the question is, what is the message here? What are we to learn from one of the worst tragedies that most people can't imagine possible even to happen? What is the message for us? Passover, the Mishnah says, obligated person should imagine as if he left Egypt. Since one can Jewish history, and especially the night that we're supposed to give over a very compelling and important message, be based on let's make believe. Let's make believe we were there. I don't know where it says any place we were all there. Mount Sinai, the Talmud brings a sentence for it. In the scriptures, but I don't think we all have to believe we're at. We all left Egypt, so why should I imagine as if I left? I'm comfortable saying my father left. I know it happened, but what do you mean? Let's all sit and make believe. What a message are we telling our child? Let's make believe. Make believe is a very terrible message to give anybody, especially when you're started trying to build the basis of a religious experience or religious commitment. It never happened. Make believe you were there. I'd be very comfortable saying I owe God a debt of gratitude because of what he took my father out. But not that I, someone's told me a few Holocaust stories yesterday of their miraculous salvation. Okay, well, you have to imagine you were there. Had your grandmother not been saved, you wouldn't be here today. That I understand. But that's not the same as saying you were there. In fact, even halacha, there's a compelling difference. I owe my parents a mitzvah in the Torah to give them honor and respect. My grandparents, many opinions think it's only rabbinic. My great-grandparents, I don't even sure there's any... I better not... No, there is a very important obligation. It doesn't make any sense. So what does that tell me? If it hadn't been for my parents, I wouldn't be here. If it hadn't been for my grandparents, I also wouldn't be here. And yet there's no Torah obligation of honor and respect to my grandparents. The answer is because from my parents I received directly. From my grandparents, I'm only an indirect beneficiary. And an indirect beneficiary is not the same as a direct beneficiary. Even though without my parents, the Mishnah says we owe our parents respect and honor because they brought us to this world. Now, had it not been for my grandparents, I also would not be in this world. But they didn't do that directly to me. They did that to my parents, and I'm an indirect beneficiary from their actions, as opposed to what my parents did for me directly. So it's clear that halacha recognizes a huge difference to what happened to me and to what happened to my grandfather that I benefited from. So what kind of Irish guy? Make believe you were there. It doesn't make any sense. Make believe you were there. We shouldn't be saying that message. Actually, in the Haggadah, it does say, that I can live with. Had Pharaoh not taken out, had God not taken us out of Egypt, we'd still be slaves. That I understand. But what are we saying? I have to imagine as if I went out. Another very strange language is in this in the Haggadah also. We say it with this. We introduce the four sons. Baruch HaMokko, bless the place, meaning God. Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenosan Torah L'Amo Yisrael. Baruch Hu, Keneged Arba Bonim Dibra Torah. What does those words mean? What do you mean, Baruch HaMokko, Baruch? What does that mean? What are we calling God Mokum? It's about the least, it's the only name that's totally not holy. There's nothing holy about Mokum. Doesn't even give an idea of some type of Ribono Shel Olam, Kutcha Berichu. You have words that, what do you mean Baruch HaMokom? Then we have things that in the Haggadah have nothing at all to do with Pesach night. There's an argument here brought in whether we have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night or not. Reb Lezer ben Azariah says, I'm now 70 years old and wasn't merited that we should say Yetzias Mitzrayim at night in Krishma until Ben Zoma gave a drasha, and the Chachamim disagree with the drasha. Everybody agrees Pesach night there's an obligation of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's no question. This is a question every night of the year. When I say Shema at night, do I say the first two chapters or do I say all three chapters? What does it have to do? Who's talking about this now? Everybody agrees Pesach night we're obligated. What are we getting into a whole discussion of Shema here? It's also interesting, in the paragraph before, they were up all night studying until the students came, time for Shema. What does that have to do with anything? Doesn't make any sense either. So they said all night. We're trying to see how disrespectful the students were. What are we trying to find? We have to worry that the Rebbe's were going to forget to say Shema. You want to say, you were telling them how important it is. So, whoever, the more you talk, is Hareza Meshubach in the first paragraph. And the second one, by the way, great scholars spent all night studying. Fine. What do we need this little anecdote at the end? I'd like to begin. I want to give what I think is a message we hopefully will be able to give over to our children. We all know that the plague of Makkos Bechoros happened at midnight. And it's a very interesting notion that it happened exactly at midnight. You know, God doesn't do miracles to flex his muscles, to show his omnipotence. That's one of the rules the Rambam says regarding miracles. He says that actually in his magnum opus, in the Yad HaZoh. It's normative Jewish law. God does not do miracles just to tell us he can do a miracle, that he's omnipotent. A miracle has to have a purpose. He took us out of Egypt. If all the firstborn would have been killed, 5 to 12, 10 after 12, 10 o'clock, what difference does it make? Pharaoh didn't come running in, get out of here, because they died at 12. They died. Aim bias a shirain shomes. There was not one hound that there wasn't somebody dead. That's an enormous trauma to the Egyptians. What exactly is this whole focus on midnight? And actually, Rashi tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu did not say at midnight. He said around midnight. Otherwise, the astrologers of Egypt would have said, oh no, Moshe, you're a liar. It happened 3 minutes to 12. What a Pyrrhic victory. Every house has murdered Egyptians dead, and they come in feeling very, very happy, gloating, the astrologers. Ha, it was 3 minutes before. What kind of Irish guy? The Torah has to deal with this, and they're not stupid people, obviously. I think the Torah is telling us the message of midnight is as follows. There is no such thing as midnight. Midnight does not exist. Exact midnight doesn't exist. The night is 12 hours from dusk, sun, the stars coming out, till dawn in the morning. You have 12 hours. You have half a day. If you say in the middle, means 6 hours before and 6 hours after. Otherwise, it's not exactly in the middle. If it's 12:00 and 1 second, it's not in the middle of the night. If it's 11:59 and 59 seconds, it's not the middle. There's no such thing anywhere in the Holy Scriptures, anything called midday. Midday doesn't exist. Midnight doesn't exist, and midday doesn't exist either. What the Almighty was doing here was actually addressing a very fundamental issue here. And this is what the astrologers have a huge issue with. In order for something to happen exactly at midnight means, and that's the astrologers would be able to measure 6 hours from night till the event, and they would be able to measure 6 hours after that till morning. And they couldn't. They know they couldn't do that. And therefore, they would say Moshe's a liar. It happened 11:59, or it happened 12:01, because it can't be. Because it doesn't exist. It's only 12. If he would have said exactly at midnight, they would have said he's a liar. What difference does it make? It's a Pyrrhic victory. There's a huge difference. If something happens within the framework of time, that means the God that we serve is a God like all the other gods, more powerful, but he's like everything else. Time and space are eternal entities. Like all the nations of the world believe time and space are eternal, and God is a power. Some of them think God has more powers. Some say limited powers. Many gods have all the powers together. But God lives, their idea of God lives within time and space. What we believe is God created time and space. What's the difference if God created time and space or God lives within time and space? The difference is, if God created time and space, that God is everything. There's nothing that's not God. Somehow, he created a way that we could have a relationship with him. But we know that if God can create time and space, then we know that he's everything. If God cannot create time and space, and he lives within time and space, so he's just a power in the universe. Next year, six other powers can band together and displace him. 1,000 years from now. But God is also not eternal. The only thing that's eternal is time and space. I mean, Aristotle says the world is an eternal entity. That's the basic thinking of the secular philosophy. The world is eternal. Everything exists within the world. Yetzias Mitzrayim happened at midnight means that actually if you measure exactly, and they were honest, there were 6 hours before and 6 hours afterwards to tell us that it was an experience that happened outside of the framework of time. This was something not happening within time, but God who created time can manipulate time. Because time is a created entity rather than an eternal entity. The message that God wanted us to get in Egypt is that God created time and space. And since God created time and space, therefore he is all of reality, as opposed to a power within an existing world. That's what the Torah, that's what Rashi, opening Rashi and Chumash tells us that. Why do we start with Bereshis Bara, that God created time and space? Well, we can start with Achodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodoshim. God actually created time and actually empowered us to regulate time. The world of Rosh Chodesh is not just setting a calendar, that the way the Jews set the calendar, things that need a certain duration of time are affected by that. If we say it's an extra month and something that normally needs 3 years, it's going to be 3 years and 1 month now. Because time, God gave us time. In a way, it's a greater message than God created the world. He actually gave us the power to create time, to control time also. Which means he also elevated us and gave us a connection to him that's connected to all of reality. The name of this revelation of God is a reality that Jews have to live in and understand, and that is called Yichud Hashem, that God is everything. Time, space, everything is included in his reality. That's our definition of God, and we have a relationship with God who is everything. Yichud Hashem. You know, the tour brings the following question. In Tuf Ayin Gimel, he asks a very interesting question. He asks, how come we don't say, before we read the Agoda, she'osen nisim lavosenu, just like we say by other miracles. It's a night of great miracles. The mitzvahs that was saper v'nisim and iflos. So why don't we say she'osen nisim? So the tour says, because at the end of the Haggadah, ending before we come, eat matzah more, we say, Asher golonu, the gol of the saint, we have a blessing. So the Orach HaShulch, I don't know what he's talking about. He says, by Mikra Megillah, we have a blessing before of she'osen nisim, and we talk about the miracles after too. He says he doesn't know what the Torah is talking about. He has his own pshat. He thinks maybe Mariel says. Then he brings the Prisha from Amram Gon and says the following. The reason we don't say she'osa nisim, because this is greater than a miracle. A great miracle. And we don't say it's the Yeshua of Hashem, and we don't say osa nisim. That's where Amram Gon was before the time of the Rishon. And in fact, the word Gon has a numerical value of 60. And the Meiri says that anybody who had that title, in order to get his entrance into the yeshiva of the Gonim, had to know the entire 60 tractates of the Talmud by heart. That was the entrance exam. Not how many you want to, oh, just start reciting all 60. And he said, this is a few hundred years before the Rishon that we know well and we respect. And says this answer, this is more than a miracle. And the Orach HaShulchan, you take this, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know, that's his words, lo yodati, I don't know what he's talking about. But I think both the tour and the Rabbanim going to say this, she'osa nisim means we're celebrating a miracle. Miracles, events that happen within nature, we see God's involvement, he can change nature. Pesach night is not about talking about miracles to God, it's talking about that too, but the ultimate thing we're celebrating is that we are connected to him who is all of reality. Geula means we've connected to him and he is all of reality. We're talking about that we have a connection to the source of all existence. We're not talking about actions that happened to Jews. We're talking about things that we're connected to the source of all existence. That's what Geula means. I believe that's probably what the Torah is saying also. We say, Asher Golanu. Geula is not a miracle. Geula means God. The word Goel in the Torah does not mean to redeem a person as pidyon. Geula means to take. He took us to himself. We became part, to some extent, we become part of him. The message that we have to have Pesach night is we are part of him. What is the difference between that message and all other messages? Yes, it says more about God, but it means that we become an eternal entity. Well, we are, you person cannot be eternal and nation cannot be eternal if God himself is not eternal. And any God that's subject to time and space, and just he wasn't eternal, time and space preceded him. And therefore he's powerful and he's wonderful and has enormous, enormous power, but he's not eternal. When we relate to a God that's eternal, that's a message to us that we are part of his eternality. The Jewish people, the message that we have to give to our children, we are an eternal nation. We exist forever and ever and ever. Not 5,000 years, not 5 million years, forever. We actually say this in the Shebechol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chalo seinu v'akadosh baruch hu matzi leinu miyodam. Every single generation, there will always be the enemy trying to annihilate us, and we will be saved. How do we know? Where do we know that from? Who says that? Rashi says in Chumash, on the Bris Mishnah, the Gamas Agoyasher, and also the nation that enslaves you, I will punish. V'gam, and also means all the nations. All the nations. Well, what does that really mean? What that means is if we're connected to him, so we are, in a sense, indestructible. We're actually connected to him, and therefore we are our being indestructible comes because we're connected to him. The greatest message we can give our children, especially living in today's time, anybody I actually met here a few years ago in the hospital, somebody asked me to see his grandfather, who was not well, he was living in Toronto, down here in the hospital, so a fellow called me from Toronto. I went to see him. Must have been probably late 80s then. And I started to talk to him. You know, I was expecting to have to brush up on my Yiddish. He was born in Lower East Side, and he was actually in the liberating forces of Auschwitz. I'm not exactly sure if the Americans were, but he was in the first American force to come, an Orthodox boy from the Lower East Side. And what he saw was, the way he described it was, I asked him, what did you think would have been with the Jewish people at that moment? How long are we going to last? When he saw what happened to 6 million, and they didn't know the numbers, but another 20 years, another 30 years. Can you imagine coming from that? Anybody just walk in and see emaciated scarecrows that are starving, dead, half dead, three quarters dead, emotionally, physically, most of the Jews in general dead. And imagining what's going to be 60 years from now, 50 years, probably nothing. You know, be some kind of memory of some Jew. Who's going to keep Judaism? It's going to survive? Let's now fast forward. We have a world-class army. Only two nations in the world. When the economy went bust here in the banks, only two nations in the world, their banks didn't default. That was Canada and Israel. We have a world-class army. Technology, it's one of the leading. How many Nobel Prize winners do we have? Every time I hear about somebody, God forbid, having an illness, and they hear there's a new drug that maybe can work for cancer, for leukemia, it's coming out of Israel. It's unbelievable, a small nation. The only thing that no one could have really foreseen, that enormous ally we had, 200 million people, great friends surrounding us, that gave us strength and gave us encouragement and support, that we couldn't have foreseen. But other than that, and again, by the way, we look around today, we have the same feeling. The whole world's against us. Right now, somebody will stop the Meshuggah in Iran. 10 years from now, believe it's going to happen. Someone will do something. It's too easy that it shouldn't happen. And there's so much world opinion that it shouldn't happen. It doesn't make any sense other than the fact that we have a guarantee for our survival and being connected to God. We have a guarantee for our thriving also. It's unbelievable what we have accomplished. The standard of living is surely higher than in England, who was one of the major victors of the Second World War. The amount of technology that's coming out of there, probably in sheer numbers. I wouldn't know about this, but I wouldn't be sure that the English army would be able to defeat the Israeli army head on. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's really unbelievable what we've achieved. Because that's part of the guarantee of our survival. And every one of us and every one of our children, every time you picked up the internet this morning and you saw that, now the UN wants to condemn us also, and what else is new, and now they have Obama behind them. There's a fear of we're going out of business. That's the greatest fear that we're all facing. And, a child who feels that Judaism is going out of business, doesn't make any sense to keep anything. Okay, we saw religious, but our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, it doesn't make any sense. If you're going out of business, you're going out of business. Why should I deprive myself for some kind of entity that's gone out of business? Why should I even identify myself as a Jew? It's only going to accelerate my trip to oblivion. Doesn't make any sense. The greatest message that we have to give our children is that we are here forever. The thing happened b'chatzos halayla means we are part of God's, and we are part of His unity. were actually part of it. He didn't make that miracle just to say, I can do a miracle. He let us know that he created time and space, and he created an event that goes beyond time and space. And by the way, that's why Passover night, we don't have to lock our doors. It's Leil Shemur. What do you mean? That happened thousand? No. Any event that happens outside of time, when this is the anniversary of that event, and therefore tonight is also Leil Shemur, and therefore any Jew can say, I went out of Egypt. The moment of the exodus of Egypt was at midnight. The main Geula was at Urta. The main, what we say, the whole notion of leaving Egypt, we didn't leave till the morning. And yet, the halacha is that the main Geula, the main liberation, happened at night. Because Geula means the moment we become connected to God, that's the moment that we are totally free. We're totally not any more connected to Pharaoh. We are, and our longevity and eternality is assured. That's what the Almighty was giving us, that message. And therefore, there's no more important message to give that to our children, that we are here forever. This is not a business. You know, just imagine somebody has a business. You know, God forbid a business has signs of that's going out of business. You can't even schlep yourself to work anymore. Your kids aren't going to want to join a business. They know that's an enterprise that is 20 years or 40 years down the line. You lose all desire to be involved now. The guarantee, the God guarantee. And we, in our lifetime, we see this guarantee more than any generation ever saw it. Who ever saw that in 70 years after 6 million Jews were murdered, that a nation has emerged as a world-class power in many, many ways? And that's even when we're not doing everything right. We have a lot more that we can do a lot better. And nevertheless, the God's guarantee is so astounding to us that it defies, there's no logical way that can possibly be understood. In addition to all the people that today and for the last 60 years have been trying to destroy us daily, yearly. That's the message we have to give our children. We were there. Because this, he did an action outside of time. That's why it's Yichud Hashem. That's what it means. Until their students came and said, "Higi Azman Krishma Shel Shachris." We're not talking little message there. The time they spent all night. That's all we have to say. The Rambam says that the goal of the, we start with the ignominious past until we. Hashem took us out, Vikir Vonu, this is the language of the Rambam, the laws of Chametz U'Matzah, 7th chapter. Vikir Vonu HaMokum LiYichudo, he brought us into his unity. Unity means he brought us into becoming part of his eternal reality. That's the message we have to give our children. And that message we say on a daily basis, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That we will be part, everybody eventually, but we have a real connection to his echad, to his absolute unity. And that's why we say it on Pesach night. And that's also why we introduce, the students say, time to say Shema, which means time to give the culmination of the whole message of the night. The whole night they were discussing the story, and now the students say, okay, now take everything you learned tonight and translate that and express it in the mitzvah of Higi Azman Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. Say Yichud Hashem. You thought about it, you discussed it, you went through the historical events that proved it or that allowed us to observe it and to internalize it. This is what we are obligated to now go ahead and express on a daily basis because of what we learned Passover night. The rest of the year, it only makes sense that we're not just giving some lip service to something, but we're actually expressing a feeling that we can internalize that we are part of the oneness of God. By the way, included in that's interesting enough. It's not a great problem to lose your life. But Rabbi Akiva, that was the pasuk he said, and Jews traditionally on their deathbed said Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That means I'm not really dying. I'm part of an eternal existing entity. Yes, I am dying physically, but I'm not going to oblivion. I'm actually getting reconnected to God. That's what the word makom also means. Baruch ha-makom is the same thing. That's why when we go to a house of mourning, God forbid, somebody died, instead of saying harachmon, God that's compassionate, God that has mercy, showing this family some comfort, we say ha-makom yenachem, which is a very meaningless word, place. It means God is all of space. So when somebody dies, there's no real separation. It's like you move to another country, but really part of the same reality. God is place. God is place and God is time. And therefore we become what we tell Hamokim Yenachim, let a person internalize that feeling, and his departed father is not in a different place. Not that he no longer exists. Our real existence is because we're both rooted in the Almighty, and that is our ultimate feeling of reality and our connection to him. So if anybody wants to know the way to react to that, there's no possible, when a person is traumatized, you're a victim. There's nothing you can do. And the trauma of seven beautiful, wonderful, innocent children dying and a family being destroyed is a pain that nobody could imagine. When you're traumatized, there's nothing to do. You're a victim. The only way to handle trauma is you have to be able to have a source outside of the trauma that gives you strength. This trauma, and a trauma is an attack on you, a physical attack, an emotional attack on you, and you become a victim. The way we have to learn here is that there is something we have to do. And what we have to do is we can key in to the fact that we're connected to the Almighty, who is, and we can, on this time of year, more than any time of the year, we have the ability, we're reliving those experiences, we're talking about them all night, and therefore we get the sense of makom becomes internalized in us, the sense of time becomes, we are connected to He who is everything. That's the way we can learn, and that actually should drive us, because anything else, it'll drive you mad. Living with that pain. Now, after a while, you can deny the pain. That works too. But if you want to really strengthen ourselves, is we have to realize we have a greater place to draw strength from that can, in fact, can even include that loss. They're in the same place. We're all connected to the same reality. It wasn't a coincidence. This is the message that it happened on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Rosh Chodesh Nissan, Rashi says in Chumash, that is the day the Torah says they actually brought the Paschal Lamb. I didn't bring the Paschal Lamb till the 14th. Rashi says that's when they committed. So our connection to the Paschal Lamb didn't start on the 14th. It started Rosh Chodesh Nissan, which, by the way, Rosh Chodesh Nissan is when we understood that we own time. The time we are, God gave in our hands time, which is only to own time. You have to be the creation. You have to be all of reality. God empowered us with time, so we actually could begin that experience that we are connected to Him, and therefore, when we got that, that's when we committed ourselves to bring the Paschal Lamb, because we already knew our connection to time. That's the feeling of the eternality of the Jewish people. That's the way we have to learn. And probably it happened this time of year as opposed, because this we have, if we use that terrible tragedy to strengthen this, that will be certainly for us a help, and it'll be a help for whatever happened to, which we don't know why it happened, but it gives comfort too, that they have brought us all to a feeling of the eternal reality of the Jewish people. That's the message. There's no more important message. Don't lose sight of that. Ask questions that will give the children a focus on that. Coming with a few intelligent, assuming they're intelligent, but even if they're intelligent, Divrei Torah doesn't leave any message for anybody. The message that everybody has to leave the home with, the Seder, especially the guests who have already far removed for Judaism. Part of their decision of far removing, They came. They knew it was there. They see we're just a matter of time till we're out of business. That's certainly any secular Jew. That's part of his mindset that allows him to go further and further away, because he knows it's days and years, maybe days, months, that we're all out of business. Everybody knows the Holocaust could happen, likely will happen again. But we have to understand we have a guarantee of our eternal survival, because we are part of his reality. That's what the Paschal Lamb celebrates. It's very interesting. The Paschal Lamb is a sacrifice brought by an individual. However, it has all the characteristics of a community sacrifice. If Pesach were this year, it would be Motzei Shabbos, we'd actually be sacrificing the Paschal Lamb on Shabbos. There's no individual sacrifice that a person is allowed to bring on the Sabbath, only communal sacrifices. So the Paschal Lamb, even though it is the sacrifice brought by an individual, it has the characteristics of the whole community, which probably tells us the same thing. We are the community. When we become part of his reality, it almost becomes an indivisible entity. It's a oneness, and therefore we are part of him, and he is, it's always one, and therefore we are all one. All of us as Jews are one. And that's why it has the characteristics. We're not only celebrating thank you for taking us out of Egypt, it's Golana, we became part of him. It was like Reb Amram Gona saying, it's something that is way beyond, we're not talking about a miracle, we're talking about becoming part of all of reality, which is not a miracle that happens and tomorrow something happened in the past. It's an ongoing phenomenon of being connected to him, which is a feeling of eternality. If we walk away with that feeling, you can't say Shosa Nisim. And that's what empowers us. Does anybody, in our lifetime, we can relate to the Holocaust. We have parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles. So we have that in front of us. But let's go back to the sufferings that have gone through thousands of years. So about the victors, the unbelievable Greeks, what they did to us. I don't say they're totally out of business. If you like olives, it's a good country, Greece. And if you can afford a big yacht, it's a good country. Probably there's more Jews in the world today that know classical Greek than Greeks. Probably. Now, Italy, we're going to knock down Rome? I like leather shoes. My wife likes golden. You know, so let's not negate them. I mean, they do have, but you can compare that to Israel, after everything of thousands of years of murder, pogroms, annihilations. I don't think any of us has a doubt how long Italy would last against the state of Israel, how many Nobel Prize winners Italy has, how many Nobel Prize Italy and Greece have together. God is watching out. Take the big picture. We are here forever. We should take pride in that. We should understand our connection to him. That gives us a huge strength. And for those of us that do internalize it, it also makes sense to begin doing the right thing, too. You know, he can be here forever, but it's nice to be wanted and nice to be growing and be more aware of that connection, feel that connection. That's the message we have to give our children at the same. And now more than any time in history, because there's so much communication every day. You open up your internet, you open up the news, you know that there's more anti-Israel, more people threatening to destroy, more of people that were in the past allies, more people saying let them start us. It has to be a two-state, and that Putin today said that they should be the Jerusalem should be the capital of power. These aren't small, these are people that have huge power in the world. And it's very frightening. Unless we understand that we are part of God's reality, it's not going to be hard to get depressed. Once we get depressed, we begin giving up things. With the message of Pesach night, is the most important message of the year that we have to internalize, and every day we have to reaffirm. But to the extent that the Seder is meaningful, so every night of the year when I say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, if I really internalize it, Pesach night of our eternal connection to Him, He's everything and we're eternally, and He showed He wants to include us in being part of Him, then every time we say Shema, we remind ourselves, we reaffirm, and we get strengthened every single day. This is the guarantee of our survival and thriving. We should all thrive in Lashon HaBo. We should be in Yerushalayim HaBnuyah.